sure if it reminded you, you are still under oath, and we're still under oath. And I would ask Chairman Manier if he's got questions. I presume he does.
There's a famous cartoon strip called Pogo.
Yes.
You remember the famous quote from that cartoon strip was, "We have met the enemy and they are us." And I actually, I'm just at a loss at what your advice is about who's supposed to pay for this. Let's say we agree with you. It seems to me that every path you're pointing us to involves either having Basin do something different, and I don't see why they would. Honestly, I don't see why they would. It doesn't make sense to me. Or essentially get us in the business of allocating winners and losers among the existing membership of Basin. Because it can't really be the management of Basin. I mean, I suppose we could start doing what we've talked about before, which is cutting 90% of the staff, but that seems to be counterproductive. I don't understand where you're expecting us to go with this in terms of who ultimately is going to pay for it.
I believe that the best outcome is one in which Precorp challenges the rate increase as being unrelated to provision of electric power under its contract. I'm not an attorney, but I understand that the contract specifies that the charges are to cover certain specific things. They are to be sufficient, but no more than sufficient to cover certain specific things. It seems to me that DGC losses fall outside that purview. So it would involve circumstance in which Precorp challenges that requirement or that bill, and Basin reflects and chooses a different course of action, perhaps makes some accommodation. You know, there are some facts that have been changing in this case as we've gone forward. At the time of the rate increase, there was one set of projections regarding Basin's costs. Over time, the projections for Basin Electric improved. The circumstances of Basin Electric are better at the end of 2015 than at the time this rate increase was adopted. So things have improved at Basin Electric since the rate increase. So it suggests to me that we are in a situation in which if a regulator determines that certain costs should not be passed through, sends a message to the utility under its jurisdiction that it should seek remedy under its contract, doing so knowing that Basin Electric's numbers have improved since the time they levied the rate increase. I would think that somewhere in all of those, in that dynamic, there would be a way to arrive at a better solution than the one that's been imposed by the Basin rate increase. So I realize that that is a not as cut and dried the kind of regulatory action that might occur in a traditional rate case. And I realize that there's something unsatisfactory about that. I find it unsatisfactory, but I also think it's unsatisfactory for costs that clear to be out of bounds to be coming into rates. And these are very significant costs coming into rates to captive customers. So it could be a combination of a disallowance, perhaps something less than what I've recommended, something that I suggested ways that number could be watered down, but would still nevertheless send a message and encourage a different solution among the parties, among the principals.
I'm just not understanding why that makes any sense. I mean, genuinely, it's because we know from the previous proceeding that we have a utility that is almost uniquely under stress, almost in the history of my history, is only 8 years here, but we've never seen anybody that has faced a downturn revenues on the scale that Precorp in the period that they faced them in. So to me, if this were somebody was in a more stable position, you might try to extend time or think about what those options are, but that just doesn't make any sense. We could easily, by simply biting on this, drive them over the edge. And then where would we be? Then where would everybody be? One of the advantages that all these people have is good credit. If you lose good credit, don't get it back very fast. But I just want to let you know, if you have some reaction to whether I'm misreading the condition of this utility, that would be helpful to me, because I don't think I am. But I don't, these sort of speculative things about what they might do in its context aren't making sense to me. But I want to get your feedback about why I might be wrong about that.
Well, I understand your concerns, and I understand it's not my intention in making recommendations to put Precorp under financial duress.
And if we're wrong about it, it's more than undue financial duress. That'll come back and get your clients. If we're wrong about how far we push, will it not? Can we not agree that the credit rating of this utility would be completely jeopardized if we're wrong about that? They don't meet their OTR for 2 years. You got a receiver, you got a different set of circumstances entirely. So I'm wondering, and that would affect your clients, not just your clients, but frankly, that corner of the state, all the customers of this utility. It just feels like you're playing with fire, and I don't understand what the end game really is for your client. I mean, it feels like what's going on in Washington right now, since I'm a Democrat, I can say that. But I really don't understand why we should be biting on this.
Well, you know, talk about joint interveners for a moment. I mean, you know, these are companies that employ over 2,500 people in Wyoming. They pay hundreds of millions of dollars of royalties and taxes in Wyoming. They are under financial duress themselves, and
I get all that.
So they find themselves in a position of a very significant rate increase that has questionable origin. So I'm not saying it's an easy problem to solve, and I'm not saying that I'm not being cavalier about what the responsibilities are here. I do believe that it's important to craft a message back to Precorp from the commission to Basin through Precorp that this commission is concerned, to say the, you know, at minimum, about.
I can write a letter that says that, but that's not what you're asking.
Well, I recognize that, and I'm also laying out some suggestions about dollar impacts that are less than the full amount, and could be.
And who would pay those dollar impacts? It seems to me the working premise here is that if it doesn't hit the companies you're representing, then it's really not hurting anybody, and it's still fair to everybody. I'm just not understanding why you think that.
Well, I guess when I said dollars that are less than the full amount, I'm also talking about recognizing some offsets and stretching out the time period under which the disallowance is valued. That is, that would bring down the amount of the disallowance, looking at the share of the DGC costs, not just over 17 months, but looking at it over 29 months, or, you know, 3 years plus the stub year. I mean, you know, in those time periods, the DGC share of the rate increase is declines. So one could look at it as so one could find a way to get to a smaller disallowance if it was looked at over a broader period of time, and would still be consistent with the principle of disallowing costs that are outside the bounds of reasonable. So I do think there are ways to get to a smaller number and would send the important message, but would be less dramatic in terms of the dollar impact. So I would certainly encourage you to consider some of those options, because if you encourage you to find a balance between sending the message that some of these costs should not be imposed upon captive ratepayers, while still recognizing that you don't want to make the remedy so harsh that it causes problems for Precorp that are too severe.
So some degree of problem is fine for the purpose of sending a message, but as long as it's not too severe, then.
Well, I'm sorry. I'm trying to be sensitive to your position.
Okay, let's try just one other thing. Actually, I need to talk about one other thing. When I finished up with Ms. Sorensen, of the place that I was coming out, at least temporarily, was when Precorp became a member, its deal with Basin Electric was, we're now a member, we get, we essentially share in the edifice that you've created, which at the time included DGC. And it also included goals and objectives like maintaining an A, based A rating. And the quid pro quo was that they would be charged in exchange for the commodity that was being provided, okay? Didn't say each element of this has to be a commodity. It was in exchange for the commodity that was being provided, you're going to pay a price. That price will be expressed as the commodity you're buying. But that package included a number of things. And I guess my question to you is, why can't they enter into an arrangement like that, even if all the elements of the package are not very specifically electric generating or transmitting utilities or distributing utilities? Where do we get to the point where you have to say Basin can't think of its portfolio of exposures, which is the way that I was getting the description from the Basin cases, conscious exposure to a portfolio of business interests that are broadly related? Why can't Basin do that, enter in an agreement with Precorp, the exchange be electricity for a price that's computed in a certain way, without having to have all the rest of us get in the business of picking at that? Whether we pick at the rate or pick at the elements that they've included. I mean, I haven't seen anything here as ridiculous as the baseball kind of game team, for example. It seems to me we know there's a board. It seems to me that the businesses are related. Why should we penetrate beyond that? Because your supposition is we agree with that premise to start out with, and I'm not sure in there. So I need you to have me walk.
Sure. I would approach, there's sort of a two-pronged approach, Chairman Manier, to your question. The first prong is that I would challenge the presumption that the arrangement with Basin Electric was one in which the entire suite of activities was simply commoditized and translated into an energy price in the past. This mid-year rate increase represented a change in the way calculations were made. Granted, DGC was part of the package, certainly in the past, but Basin Electric prices that were charged to Precorp and the other members, based on my review of their Basin's documents, were based on Basin Electric as an electric utility. That is, they set margins based on the Basin Electric utility. DGC, while it was owned by Basin, while it has some of synergies that have been discussed, was a separate subsidiary. And when it had a profitable year, as I understand it, it was treated as its own entity. And there were occasionally specific dividends back from DGC to Basin, you know, some of which have been found their way into these dividends that have been discussed. But I don't believe
it. We'll respond to it. Yeah. So we can have a dialogue about that.
Yeah, yeah.
My understanding was, and I went to page 12, like you told me, and that took me back to Ms. Sorensen's testimony, which I understood to be this, that for a variety of reasons, which she refers to as the perfect storm, okay? Remember the perfect storm part. They wound up having to focus on the credit rating on a consolidated basis, which affects all of their entities. Okay, so we know, for example, that DGC is borrowing money as well. So it's the credit rating consolidated that affects all their companies, and they had to take steps to improve the metrics. Metrics, she mentioned at least five that I can recall as I sat here. That made sense to me. I didn't understand why. I mean, it made sense to me that they might reach a business pass that would require them to look, particularly if their credit was being set based on a consolidated basis, that might require them to take steps like that. And it still doesn't strike me that that's an unreasonable departure from what I still think is the process, which is that they describe, even if it's not exactly the same process year to year, age to age, whatever, which was to essentially have Precorp become member of the larger Basin enterprise with all its warts and all its pluses, but it's still an enterprise, and the enterprise as a whole is where you're winding up getting either pluses or minuses, or at least the rates you're paying in any given year. I'm still not understanding why they can't do that, and why in a time of duress they can't do what they did.
Let's pick up right from there then.
Okay.
Where does Basin find itself then in June 2016? It finds itself with a loan to invest in a urea plant. That loan has covenants that require minimum equity requirements.
Well, Basin doesn't find itself alone. DGC has a loan.
DGC has a loan. DGC has a loan.
Basin standing behind it.
Basin standing
behind it. Which is not exactly the same thing as Basin having a loan.
Thank you. Thank you for that clarification. DGC has a loan with covenants that require minimum equity requirements. Again, the product, the subject of the loan is a urea plant. Basin then finds itself in a situation in which it wants to shore up its consolidated balance sheet to basically address DGC losses, and finds itself in the position under the covenant of having to make equity, believing, at least in June 2016, that there was a reasonable chance that they had to make equity infusions to meet that covenant. So now it becomes a Basin writ large problem that they've got to make these equity infusions. The implication for customers in all of this is that my reading of the evidence is that Basin elected to raise rates on its captive customers as the solution to that equity infusion it believed it had to make to stand behind the covenant to invest in the urea plant. Now,
I just want to read it too much further.
Yeah, yeah.
You say elected to raise rates on its captive customers.
Yes.
Your clients aren't its captive customers. Your clients are customers of Precorp.
Yes.
Basin has members.
Yes.
Whatever Basin's doing, it's doing to its members. And its members may be doing better or worse than Precorp, for all I know. I don't know what they're doing up in the Bakken. I have a feeling that that's a nightmare that I'm glad isn't in our jurisdiction. But an understanding why it is I have to make the leap that Basin, and it's, as part of its evil empire, is reaching out to the tap the ratepayers to foist this all off on them. It seems to me if there is any flexibility in this, there isn't a direct channel from Basin down to Precorp. I mean, Precorp has a lot of other operating features, including its own credit, right?
Yes.
Okay. Its own the skills of its own management. The other members of the co-op, each one of these members, each member is going to have their own circumstances. So I'm not understanding why you're saying this is a rate increase. I mean, it may, in some cases may likely result in rate increases, but.
Well, let me pick up from there then. Basin levied an average 7 mil rate increase on its members. The member under your jurisdiction here, Precorp, turned around and passed every dollar of that on to its captive customers. So the consequence of Basin's decision to address its consolidated balance sheet challenges, which have everything to do with Dakota gasification, was that Basin rate increase from electric customers wound up being part of a COPA filing by Precorp and then seeking recovery from Precorp's captive customers. Now, I find this troubling within a model of electric utility regulation that at the end of the pipeline, in terms of the dollars that are requested, that Precorp captive customers are, by virtue of the decision made back in June, for an August increase, based on the facts that Basin understood at that time, that the Precorp captive customers are facing a rate increase that, in significant part, derives from the complexities of the financing requirements of DGC. And that takes me to the second prong of my response to your question when you said, well, what is wrong with this picture? I think a concern in monopoly regulation is how do you treat circumstances in which the monopoly engages in other business activities, other non-regulated business activities. And I do believe that an important principle of regulation of monopolies is to try to insulate monopoly customers, captive customers, from the vicissitudes of the activities that can happen in these unregulated markets for these other business activities. And so it seems to me that even though it appears that, DGC has been able to provide benefits in the past to Basin, that Basin found itself in a circumstance where there were problems with DGC. And I believe that I find it troubling that the solution was, or the consequences of, the DGC financing challenges found their way ultimately to a rate increase to captive customers. And so I think that the very fact that the forward going financing for DGC became a matter of ultimately rate making is a concern. And I think it should be a concern for regulators. And I'm not saying it poses an easy problem to address, but I think we're seeing the consequence right now of the current situation. And so I do believe that going forward, it's important that customers not be on the hook for investment decisions that are made in a business outside the electric utility.
Okay, it's an easy problem, I guess. When we control, regulate the people making a decision, it's not such an easy problem.
It's not an easy problem. It is not an easy problem.
And it's easier when the ratepayers versus stockholders, too.
It is. It is. I absolutely grant you that. I have wrestled with trying to find a path to recommend to you. And I have to start with what is the most straightforward conclusion I have, sort of the black and white conclusion, which is I believe a portion of this is imprudent. It's outside the bounds of normal utility rate making and should be disallowed. But I also have tried to suggest ways that there could be mitigation of that, even conceivably. This is just me speaking. This isn't anything clients have supported or endorsed, but even looking at it as a forward going type of thing. There's an interim rate in effect right now. You could consider disallowing some portion of this on a going forward basis. Again, if you believe that there's something amiss about having captive customers ultimately bear the consequences of financing decisions that are outside the bounds of the electric utility.
Okay, that's enough. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman Manier. Redirect, Mr. Gibbs.
Yes, Mr. Burbridge, two hopefully very short questions. Remember talking about the bill credits and dividend credits that DGC funneled back to Precor?
Yes.
In Salisbury. Could you describe how the Precor ratepayers felt the effect of those dividends and bill credits?
Well, let's put them into two categories, the bill credits and dividend credits. The bill credits, as I understand, are typically passed through the customers. I believe Mr. Easley's testimony was that that is not always the case. I think there may have been at least one year where they were not passed through to customers, but I believe in other years they were. But typically that has been with the exception of the CBM customers. The CBM customers have typically not gotten those bill credits, but they've been put in a reserve. On the other hand, the other credits that you referred to, I believe, are held as on the books and may be retired at some point in the future as part of patronage capital. To my knowledge, I don't know that customers have actually ever directly received the benefits of those dividends, the ones that were not bill credits.
And you had a discussion with Vice Chairman Russell about the embedded benefits or the soft benefits, or we've used a variety of descriptions that Ms. Sorensen talked about of being $90 million per year. Do you remember that discussion?
Yes.
Do you agree with Ms. Sorensen's appraisal of those annual embedded / soft benefits?
No, I mean, I have not evaluated those her calculations, and I believe I just want to make sure I didn't mishear Vice Chair Russell's question when he asked me about that. So I acknowledge the number. I acknowledge that is the number that Basin has identified, Ms. Sorensen has identified as the benefits. I haven't verified them myself.
Further questions, Mr. Burbridge?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Higgins, for your testimony.
Thank you.
Do you have any other witnesses?
No.
That's good. Does Precor have any rebuttal testimony?
We do not.
Okay. Before we actually close the evidentiary portion of this proceeding, I would ask, is there anybody from the public in this audience that wishes to make a comment? Is there anybody on the telephone that desires to make a public comment at this time? Hearing nothing, then I would suggest that we go ahead and close the evidentiary portion of this proceeding. With that, I would ask the parties if they desire to make any type of closing argument or statement. I would start with Precor, Ms. Good. Does Precor wish to make a closing statement?
We do not desire a closing statement.
Thank you. Interveners, do the interveners wish to make a closing statement or argument?
It would seem impolite after Ms. Good.
All right, and I'm going to ask the commissioners very quickly. I presume that you would like some briefing on this issue prior to deliberation. Unless you're telling me otherwise that you'd like to make a bench decision today, but I wasn't anticipating that. But we can accommodate that if you'd like.
I don't think that'd be good.
My understanding would be then that Precor and the interveners would desire to file a brief setting forth its arguments after this proceeding. I have looked at, and I've discussed with Mr. Norberg, it would appear that it looks like a transcript is going to be at least about 2 weeks away. I suspect that the commissioners then would like some time to digest what we get from the parties. I was kicking around the idea of making the briefs due from the parties around the 1st of March, with the idea that we could have deliberations in within the 2 weeks between the 1st and approximately the 17th of March.
Why don't we go off the record for a minute?
Sure.
We don't need to talk.
Okay. Off the record, please. We just need to take a little break.
Yeah, I want to take a little break.
Why don't we take 10 minutes and come back at 3:30?
Okay.